Dreams are so abstract, but that's not even a good enough word for it. I'm sure you can understand what I'm describing, but there's connections between, I guess, scenes in dreams. I'm trying to describe something that's indescribable, really, which is how narrative sort of flows in a dream.
Notice that the sun's going down later, rising earlier, and the nights are getting shorter? All across the country, people are coming out of their hibernation and beginning to thaw out from the winter chill. But today, I'm going to ask you to hit snooze one last time. Close your eyes and drift back to sleep. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden, and this morning, we're staying in bed, and joining us under the doona and in our dreams is Beck Fahey, producer of the Sleep Talker podcast. Hi, Beck.
Hi, Michael.
Tell us a bit about Sleep Talker.
Sleep Talker is the podcast about sleep, dreams, nightmares, and what happens in your head after dark. We all spend about a third of our lives asleep, but it's a part of our lives we're usually switched off from. I'm fascinated by those nighttime hours, and so I often find myself asking people about their sleeping patterns or their dreams. Some people don't remember their dreams at all, or they don't care about what happens when they sleep. But sometimes I come across people who are switched on, even while they're asleep.
And are we going to be hearing from some of these switched on dreamers today?
I wish I could plug in and listen to someone while they were dreaming. But it can be really hard to talk about dreams. We usually only remember our dreams for a short time, and that's if we remember them at all. So when we talk about sleep and dreaming, it's through this hazy lens. And our dreams are often full of esoteric memories or details that might make sense only to us. And that can be really difficult to communicate. Some people like to recount the events of their dream adventures, but with Sleep Talker, I've been trying to find people whose dreams aren't contained. Their sleeping minds don't stay asleep. Today, we'll follow some dreamers through the night to find out how their dreams continue well into daylight. First up, we're hearing from Declan Mulcahy, who directed Day Night's Dream, a theatrical exploration of the sleeping mind.
So what's Day Night's Dream?
Declan took the name from an old nursery rhyme. Friday night's dream, on Saturday told, is sure to come true, be it never so old. Declan recruited 7 performers to adapt their dreams for the stage. I went along to the performance and found out Day Night's Dream was more than a scripted memory of a dream, but an exploration of what might happen in anyone's head on any night of the week.
You know, you can never actually have other people see the dream exactly as you did, but you're left sort of trying to get as close to that as possible, trying to sort of recreate this experience in some way, even though it is an experience that is essentially like not able to be recreated, because it's very, you know, non-literal, very kind of abstract.
All I really, really know is, well, actually, I kind of know everything. That way you do in dreams, when all the information is just kind of implanted in your mind with total certainty, and you've got no idea how you know the things you know, you just take them for granted.
I never tend to experience coherent feelings or discrete physical sensations when I dream, but I have a sense of what the whole dream was. It's like excavating dozens of fragments and reassembling them into some familiar object. You end up using more fixative and filler than actual original material.
Are any of your dreams in the show?
No, they're not, actually. I'm completely in a coordinating role.
Do you have vivid dreams?
Yeah, I do. I don't think I could have been interested in this project if I didn't have sort of some like appreciation of dreams. I think I read too much into dreams, definitely. I put too much... I have too much faith in them.
I'm at work as the dream begins, which in hindsight should have made me realise it was a dream for two reasons.
I keep having this reoccurring dream. Like, the action of the dream itself isn't anything really, it's just one of those wasted opportunities where you're acting out real life but not.
All these questions seem designed with my childhood memories in mind.
I've yet to decide whether that's of a special significance for the dream.
You can never even remember a dream fully, so you're left to kind of fill in the blanks, sort of like as you please. You're almost given creative freedom in taking the fragments of your dream that you can remember and trying to churn them out into something that's more cohesive. So you're kind of making, yeah, these like dramaturgical, creative decisions about your dream. And I'm interested in sort of what those decisions say about an individual and what they want that dream to mean. When we're talking about dreams, we tend to sort of grab onto any points of reference that we understand from our own, like, subjective experience. And so I think talking about dreams and sort of trying to get people to understand dreams is like a great sort of, like, real-life metaphor for just, I don't know, human interaction in general, because you're trying to find people, you're trying to let people understand your point of view by giving them something that they'll understand from their perspective. So rather than finding something that you can both sort of like recognize on an objective level, like, oh, this is a truth that we both know equally and exactly the same, you have to come from different directions, different very subjective directions, and try and like understand the same thing but from your own points of view.
Golden haze becomes more intense. It spreads to my other senses. Carries me into awakening.
Crimes. I don't even recall being found guilty necessarily, but I wake up terrified because the last thing I think before I wake is I must be what they say I am.
Well, I don't think you can ever actually have a complete, like, comprehensive understanding of someone's dream or even just someone's perspective on a sort of wide level. So I think what you're kind of left with, even though there is this sort of drive to get complete, like, yeah, complete aligning of your worldviews and have a complete shared understanding of this thing, that idea is so kind of appealing, but it's also, I just think, fundamentally impossible. So I think what we're left to do is try and just recognize how like different our interpretations can be and how different our perspectives might be, and just try and find meaning that may be very different but is still present for each of us. You know, it's a step away from, in theory, recognizing that there is no like one answer, and actually acknowledging the fact that you're pretty much completely isolated in the way that you view the world, because it's informed by so many different things that no one can ever have experienced in the same way. But you have to come to terms with the fact that, yeah, this is your viewpoint, and while it's not the same as anyone else's, you can try and share as much of it as possible just by finding these like shared points of connection, even if they're shared in this like really different way. That's still sort of, I guess that's all you have, so you have to work with it.
We just heard from the cast of Day Night Stream. That story was produced by Beck Fari, who's in the studio with me today to share some stories from our podcast, Sleep Talker.
You might be familiar with that sense of déjà vu you sometimes get in dreams, of going somewhere familiar. But what about when our dreams start showing up in waking life? Next up, we'll be hearing from Zed, a man with a very striking appearance. Almost all his skin is covered in ink, including an ornate scripted word above his right eye. When I got talking to Zed, I found out the tattoo came to him in a dream.
My name, like my full name?
Whatever you want to be called. I'm gonna call you Zed for the purposes of this.
Well, it'd be Z then, wouldn't it?
No,
not Zed.
I call you Zed.
Well, Z for the purposes of it.
You wanna be Z?
I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah, Z. How would you say the alphabet? Do you say Zed?
I say Zed, yeah.
I like telling people my dreams. I like hearing about other people's dreams.
Can you tell me the story of Larissa?
The reoccurring dream. I had a dream and I was dying in it. And the reoccurring dream.
I had these dreams about dying, but always felt all right about it.
When I was, I had a girlfriend named Larissa as well. But it was like months and months later when I escaped from the clutches of Melbourne to just get away from everything, because I still felt like there was kind of elements of the relationship left around, and it was really breaking me up. I wasn't really capable of like living properly or having a proper life and kind of putting in my whole worth. I felt like there was just like an essence just lingered around that was like dragging me down all the time. So I had to just escape Melbourne, and I traveled overseas. And I was actually heading towards Europe at the time. And I started having this recurring dream that I was dying in a village. And at first, I kind of felt like that it was a place that I'd been to before. Like I'd felt comfortable that I was dying here. But I wasn't scared at all that I was actually dying. And then I realized, slowly but surely, I kept seeing this sign, and I knew what it said, but I would never be able to remember it properly. It was like the longest recurring dream I've ever had. And so as it progressed, I realized it was, it said Larissa on the sign. I made a symbolics from it, from the relationship that I was in, and I finally was able to just let go and just die, and I was all right with that. That was dying, and that part of me was dying, and I was fine about it. I wasn't scared or happy or anything. I was just, that's what's happening, and I understand. And funnily enough, I Googled it, and it ended up being a town in Greece, like a little village called Larissa that existed, and I was heading towards that way. I was actually going to go to Greece, but once I realized that, I didn't really want to go there because I thought it would kind of open up some other thing. I didn't think I'd die there because of the dream. I thought that was more of a kind of a metaphor for something else personally. I just felt unsafe about going there for some reason, so I ended up detouring off elsewhere and didn't go, and then got the tattoo. Like, the tattoos wouldn't make any sense anywhere else. I couldn't get Larissa on my hand, or I couldn't get it on my foot, or on my stomach, because it doesn't make sense to the actual symbolics of it. Because the dream made me really sad, and the whole idea of the relationship and everything, I felt like it was just kind of like a perfect placing to put it on my eye, because it was the weight, one of the last weights that would kind of make me, like, look really sad.
So, because it's on the top of your eye, it's symbolic of the weight that Larissa, this woman, and the end of this relationship used to have over you?
Well, that, as well as the dream. I would wake up every day really disjointed and wouldn't be able to really... I was, like, losing just any joy in living every day after getting up from dreaming that. Everyone was always asking, "You all right? You look really sad." I was just like, "Oh, I just had this terrible dream." And it's just like happening every day.
We just heard an interview with Zed from Bekvari's Sleep Talker podcast.
If you want to hear a longer version of that interview and find out more of the ways Zed's dreams have influenced his waking life, head to sleeptalkerpodcast.com for episode 4.
I'm Michael Bryden, and you're listening to All the Best. Today we're joined in the studio by Bekvari, producer of the Sleep Talker podcast. Where you're listening to us, we're not sure, but hopefully your eyes are closed, you're warm and relaxed, and just about to fall asleep. Now tell me, what do you hear?
Right now, we're hearing a tune from Melbourne musician James Colopi. For James, the unconscious hours of sleep can also be when creativity strikes.
So I wrote this song in a dream. I'll tell the story, I guess. Where to begin? There's no possible way I could remember what I was actually leading up to it. All I remember really is one scene coming around the corner near the house that I grew up in. I remember it had been raining and the sun was coming through the clouds, and sitting on the porch of a nearby house, one that I recognize, were maybe 24 people that I knew them all, and they were all kind of celebrating. Like, there's this real feeling that it was like after some final exam, or like they'd won some kind of grand final or something, but there's a sense that it was like this big event that they'd all come to the end of something, and now everyone was getting ready to move on to the next phase of their life, and they're all singing and they're all playing guitars and ukuleles and accordions and drums, and they were all singing this song, which was some folk song that everyone seemed to know the words to, and it was a really, really nice song, and I must have woken up halfway through it because I remembered it quick enough to pick up my phone and give a brief description of what was happening, and then hum the song into my phone. By the time I woke up, I'd completely forgotten it. But I knew that it was saved on my phone, so it was just tucked away neatly in my back pocket. And then at maybe 4 or 5 p.m., I was waiting for a train. And often when I'm on public transport, I'll listen to music, but instead of listening to other people's music, I'll just listen to my own recordings. And then I remember that I had this one thing, and I was like, oh yeah. And that's kind of the moment of truth where it's like, okay, either it sounded really great and still sounds really great, or I was just kind of like high on my own creative steam at the time, and listening back to it, it's not actually that good. I was pleasantly surprised to find that I actually really liked it.
Were you kind of half expecting that maybe it was a song that you'd heard before?
Yeah, always. Anytime I write something, I'll record it and then listen to it when I'm out on the street, or if I'm on the train or something, just to jog my memory, just be in a different environment. And sometimes, yeah, it sounds just a little bit too similar to something that I've heard before. And it had a sound of something that I've heard a long time ago, something that was written a long time ago, even before I was born. It's some jaunty tune, some sort of farewell sailor's ballad. It wasn't like some completely out of the blue piece of divine inspiration that had come down to me in my sleep. It was just me sort of reinterpreting themes that I'd heard before.
Well, I guess that's kind of what we all do in our dreams, is that we like reinterpret
outwaking information into new places, new people, new stories. And because your world is so musical, you've kind of done that through song.
I kind of do that through song even when I'm awake, when I'm writing. I occasionally get very lucky and find a melody or a couple of chords that sound completely unlike anything else, and that's always really exciting and really fun. But most of the time, it's a reinterpretation of something that Neil Young did, or something that the old country artist or the old jazz artist did melodically, and I'll just be reappropriating it for this new thing that I'm doing. It serves a purpose in songwriting because people have associations with those melodies or with those like lyrical motifs, and then by using them and then maybe twisting them in a different way or showing them in a different light, that creates a kind of an emotional reaction.
Did you have an emotional reaction to the dream?
Yeah.
How did you feel?
I felt like everyone on the porch felt. I was sad that this big thing we'd all been doing was over, but excited to move on to new and better days. I only really wrote the melody in the dream, and then I wrote the lyrics when I woke up and decided to use the kind of feeling that I've been dreaming about and use that in the lyrics. I don't know if this is the key element.
Bekvari and I are just waking up after a sleepy episode of Dreams. The stories you heard today on All the Best were taken from Sleep Talker. Bek, how do we listen to more?
Head to sleeptalkerpodcast.com for more sleep stories and to find out how you can subscribe.
We'll put a link up to Sleep Talker on our website, allthebestradio.com, and you can subscribe to us in iTunes. This episode of All the Best was produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and RRR in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Our features executive producer is Heidi Pett. Our community coordinator is Aidan Mullins. Our state coordinators are Sky Kirkham and Bethany Atkinson Quinton. And our SYN production manager is Bek Fari. My co-host is Pip Rasmussen, and I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, don't have nobody to call my own.
Bum, 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 bum.
Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him the word that I'm not a rover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam. Oh, Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Bum, 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 bum.
Mr. Sandman.
Yes?
Bring us a dream. Give him a pair of eyes with a come hither gleam. Give him a lonely heart like Pagliacci. And lots of wavy hair like Liberace. Mr. Sandman, someone to hold.